Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
I had dinner not too long ago. Good morning.
I just had breakfast. It was a cup of cereal. And actually, I found a bottle of like real legit orange juice, and it was pretty good. Because I've been drinking like the stuff you buy in the grocery store here, which is like concentrate. But this was from a nice little sandwich place that we found that's like a United States-style sandwich place, like upscale sandwich place. Huh. So it was nice to have like bottled juices and stuff, and I was like, "Oh, real orange juice!" It lived up to its name.
I don't know. I grew up on orange juice from concentrate. It's real, more or less.
Oh, Jason, Jason.
Just add water.
No, don't. You know, just drink it straight.
Oh,
that way, it's a more concentrated experience.
I would think about. I sometimes just scrape the concentrate with a spoon and have some of that.
Did it come? Is it come? That was like a can in the freezer.
Yeah, a little cardboard thing with the metal ends, and it would slide out like a can of dog food or something, or cranberry sauce.
Yeah, like cranberry sauce. Yep. But we did not do that in my household. We were strictly a Tropicana household. But
interesting.
Except on rare occasions, I remember my dad making like squeezing fresh orange juice every once in a while. We had one of these. We had a juicer that was like. It's like a little squat thing, and it was motorized though, and like you would push the half orange down on it, and it would like go like, you know, and like squeeze it out, and you get like half a tiny glass from like an orange. And I always thought like, why would you go through all that trouble? You could just drink it out of the carton. And it wasn't until many years later, I think, that I became a convert to real fresh squeezed orange juice.
All right. Well, I'm just saying, you and your fancy orange juice. Concentrate's fine, but
me and my fans.
You didn't know this was going to be the subject when we started, huh?
I never know what the subject's going to be when we start.
How about this? Netflix is going to let you download stuff. It already does. I did one today. I downloaded a thing, and it just downloaded onto my iPad, and then it was there. This has been a long time coming.
Yeah, I am impressed that what's weird about it is not that they did it. It's that over the years, they have made such a fuss about it. And like every time somebody asks them, they're like, no, we're not going to do that. Which seems weird, right? Like maybe they were just like covering themselves with, licensing deals with the content providers. But it always struck me as very strange that they seemed so adamant they weren't going to do it, since it seems like such a natural outgrowth of what they do. And you know, part of it is there are so many fewer places now where that's necessary. Because of the broad availability of internet. So like basically if you're on a plane or if you're like camping are like the two things where you probably need to download something. And maybe if you're camping, don't bring your iPad with you.
Yeah. I mean, for me, a lot of it is planes, right? I mean, that's a big part of it.
Yep.
If you're going somewhere with bad internet, I mean, that's the other thing. And there are places like,
sure.
Again, not to bring up the orange juice again, but it is easy to sort of feel like, your world is the whole world. But like I went to my sister-in-law's this weekend and they have satellite internet, which is charitably broadband. And I think if the only thing they do is watch Netflix, they can watch a Netflix movie, right? And it looks okay. But if like somebody else is trying to do something on the internet, everything gets very bad very fast. And I had that thought of like, I would download shows for that. Or when I went to Yosemite for the Yosemite conference, right? Which is not, I wasn't camping per se, but the Wi-Fi there is terrible. But I brought some Amazon downloads and I watched those there, and that was great.
So I agree with that. Here's the thing. Like I'm currently residing in a place where most of the internet is pretty bad. And so that's the problem is this sounds great, except for the fact that it still means I at some point need a network connection good enough to download this show.
I mean,
and that is not a thing that is very common around here. So it's like I can't even download it to watch it offline when I'm at home where the internet's not very good, because the internet's not very good anywhere.
Yeah, if you were in a scenario where you had like an internet cafe where the internet is good, and it used to be like that, although I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened, what changed in the world, but maybe it's just that everybody is a little more bandwidth using than they used to be. But it used to be you would go to places like some sort of cafe and they'd have really good internet. And now I find those places might not even have like they have Wi-Fi, but it's terrible. And
it's not great. Yeah, I have a couple places here that I've been using and that have Wi-Fi that is serviceable. And I have one that's like pretty good. I've been found like a co-working space that actually has the best Wi-Fi that I found so far. And so, yeah, I could probably set that, like download something there. But even there, it's not like I wouldn't be downloading like four shows. I'd be downloading like one thing.
Yeah, so I can see it a scenario if you're somebody who has bad internet, but you can go to somewhere where there's good internet, that would be another way to do it.
Yeah.
And so there, you know, I think there are a lot of scenarios that it's just, it's good to do that. But the airplane is the big one for me, right? Like, where do I go where I have no internet or at least no ability to stream Netflix and I'm sitting for a long period of time needing entertainment? The airplane is the place. Like, number one, it would have been so great if I could have taken some Netflix stuff and loaded it onto my iPad. And instead, what I did was I have a TiVo, so I used the TiVo app when I went to Ireland.
Yep.
I used the TiVo app to download some TV shows, and I used the Amazon app. But Netflix stuff, it's like, nope, I'm just not going to do it. So now they're in that game. Not with everything. Right. They have to have their rights to do it, and their contracts don't seem to be, you know, 100% on that, but it's in the ballpark. It's like they're most of the way there.
It sounds like they cover all or most of their original content.
Certain stuff that they've got licensed. But I mean, yeah, even if it was just the Netflix originals for now, it would still be great to be able to say, okay, I'm going to bring Luke Cage on the plane. Right. That's nice.
Don't bring Luke Cage. Actually, I mean, he needs a ticket and everything. I want to bring him everywhere, Chase.
It would be cool to sit next to. Well, no, at the Yosemite conference, I wanted to bring episodes of Daredevil because I was in the middle of that. Yep. And that was not going to happen. Like, just. Because it's Netflix, I couldn't do it, but now I could. So that's cool.
I want to say the one interesting thing. So Netflix works pretty well in India, actually. I was very surprised. I thought I was going to have to do the whole like VPN tunnel thing. And nope, you can just load it up. It's got, you know, most of the stuff. But what's interesting is outside the U.S., there are a lot of things that are basically that Netflix pushes under its own brand, like the Netflix original stuff, that are not Netflix originals in the U.S. I know one of them that I'm sure that you're aware of is The Expanse,
right,
which is distributed by Netflix everywhere else. But there are a ton. There are a ton of other shows where I'm like flipping through and going, that's not a Netflix show.
Well, so
that's not a Netflix show, but they're all branded as Netflix originals.
So one of the nice things about doing the TV podcast that I did with Tim Goodman is that we've got a worldwide audience for that, and we hear stories about TV in other countries, which is a lot of fun, and Australians try to scare us with poisonous stories about poisonous animals and things like that. And this is one of those stories, which is basically Netflix has decided that if it's bringing it to a country as like the first time that show has been seen in the entire country, then that's a Netflix original. So like The Expanse hasn't been on TV in all these other countries, so it's a Netflix original. They've done it with like Designated Survivor in Mexico is a Netflix original, even though it's
here too.
Yeah. I think that's kind of okay. I'm okay with it. I mean, they should probably have a separate term for it, but they don't want to do that. The idea is that if they're buying first run, so in your country, the first time you see it is this. It's not a rerun. It's new material. Then they're designated a Netflix original. And I think it's kind of brilliant because a lot of American shows now are going around the world almost immediately because Netflix is buying up the international rights. And that's, we know from Les Moonves talking about the president of CBS talking about the new Star Trek show, that he said it was a profit. It made profit before they have done anything with it because they sold the international rights, it turns out, to Netflix. So that new Star Trek show will be a Netflix original everywhere but the US and Canada.
Right.
But it's good for the TV producers, right? Because they've just, instead of laboriously trying to sell into different markets with various different TV networks, right? You just go to Netflix and they're like, yep, we'll take it. And they write you a check and that's it. And for Netflix, they get way better content mix than maybe we see in the U.S. because they're the conduit for a lot of U.S. shows overseas. It's a smart move, even though they're not really Netflix originals, right?
Yeah, the fascinating part of it is that like there is so much TV that is here that I did not expect would be like on TV. Like I've been driving past like the Supergirl billboards, Gotham billboards.
I saw your pictures.
All this stuff is all here.
There's Supergirl ads everywhere.
Yes, yes. There were like several right in like the route that I was taking. And I saw some Gotham ones as well. And then there's stuff that I know, like when my girlfriend was here and I was still at home, she found out that they were broadcasting live. Game of Thrones was on TV here, and it was sponsored by Amazon, of all people, which was fascinating. Of course, India does have some, slightly different, ratings type stuff, censorship type stuff. So they cut out a lot of the violent stuff,
and we happened to be watching an episode. In the U.S., it would not work either, right?
Sure. Yeah. Well, but what was funny was it sounded like most of the stuff they cut out was just like super like violent stuff that was, you feel, again, there's kind of a double standard, I think, in the U.S. But like we were watching an episode that was all one big battle, and I would just like be cringing, and we were like watching via Skype, and I would be like, oh my God, did you see that? And she's like, what? I was like, you didn't see that? Like that guy got decapitated or whatever. And she's like, no, they just glossed right over that. And I was like, wow, this episode is probably about 5 minutes in India because it's pretty violent.
Yeah, suffice it to say there was a fight. And then you just move on. Yep. Well, anyway, that's a good, in our continuing chronicle, I know you write about this a lot, about like Netflix and about cord cutting and all of those things. It was that was a nice one today.
It's a welcome addition.
Yeah. Magazine came out, Six Colors Magazine. It's out.
Indeed.
We did it.
It's a very nice issue this month. I feel like we cover a lot of ground.
Yeah, it was a worldwide effort, of course, but you wrote some stuff. It's kind of fun to have you just like, I'm sleeping and you're working, and I wake up and it's like, well, what did Dan do? He wrote a magazine article, he did some posts on the website. It's fun. You could stay in India.
I feel like the like house elves or something that come out when everybody else is sleeping. But it's a little lonely because like I come on in the morning and it's like I catch you guys maybe for just like an hour or two before like people are logging off and heading to bed. And then there is a long, long stretch when nobody else is awake. And so nothing really happens that much while everybody else is sleeping because so much of the news cycle is U.S.-centric. It turns out that's like it's a good time to get other stuff done, but like there's not a lot happening.
You get some Europe people on Twitter, I suppose, but that's
a little bit. Europe people who can't sleep is really the target demographic.
Well,
there.
Lauren and I went to a show last night. I went to the theater in San Francisco, and we got home, and it's like a little bit before midnight. And I had gotten a text from our friend Shali about how she couldn't be on Clockwise. And I had that moment where I was like, well, I'll just tell Dan because he's up. And it was like basically, Dan, wait until people are awake on the East Coast and then see if somebody can do it. But I woke up and it was already done. Right. That was kind of cool. But it was funny to talk to you. And that was like, hi, Dan. I because at that point, if it was coming up midnight to me, it was probably like very early afternoon for you. So, you know, we got more overlap. I think with the West Coast, especially, we've got more overlap than I kind of figured because, you know, we're talking now as we record this and it's like 7:30 p.m. my time. So it's your morning. It's my evening. I've got another West, you know, East Coast may be going to bed soon, but I've got hours before I sleep.
Yeah. I find that people, the West Coasters, they're around, but they tend to log off early. It reminds me of, you know, back you watch movies like Apollo 13 or something like that, and there's the part where they go out of radio contact,
because
they like go around the dark side of the planet or whatever, and you're like, that's kind of what it feels like. It's like, well, we're gonna lose radio contact here in a second, so have a good night, and we'll talk to you in a while.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what I said to you. Here's what's going on. Nighty night. It's like clocking out, but yeah, it's funny. So in the magazine this month, I wrote this thing. So I sat down. I mean, my idea for my first thing was like computers are awesome, which was just fun because I wanted to write that piece, and I decided that was a good magazine piece because I wanted to take a little bit of a positive spin on all the grumbling about the MacBook Pro and what the future of the Mac is and all of that, and take a step back because I feel like it's easy to take for granted some of the real breakthroughs in terms of using a computer, a traditional computer. And the ones that I came up with are like Retina screens and SSDs and like the super fast and capable connectors of something like, USB-C and Thunderbolt 3. And these are all pretty amazing bits of technology. You can throw in the touch bar if you want to on top of that and Touch ID. The problem is not that technology for computers is advancing, but like I said in the piece, I think the problem is that that stuff's expensive still. Like,
yeah, and it's you know, in our one of our favorite aphorisms from Mr. William Gibson, the future is here. It's just not evenly distributed yet. Like, you mentioned Retina displays, and I'm like, Retina displays have been around on the Mac for several years now. I still don't have a computer that has one because the cycle hasn't caught up with me in terms of, like, my computers were just right before that, and you know, I sort of haven't had a need to replace them yet because, as you point out, computers are pretty good. Like, a five-year-old iMac that I'm using as my primary iMac, like, it's still fine. A 2014 MacBook Air is a really that I'm using right now and have been using for several weeks as my only computer. It's very solid, but it's not Retina. And so I don't have, you know, I missed the cycle on that. And it's getting to the point now where most of the, if not all of the lineup is Retina, but people who are still haven't caught up or needed to refresh their computers, which you don't need to do as much because they seem to last longer these days, aren't there yet.
Oh, yeah. My 11-inch MacBook Air, the only thing wrong with it is that it doesn't have a Retina display. But otherwise, it's incredibly capable even now. But, you know, it's just that it's funny that we think of the PC as being inert. It's like, it's not really inert. The problem is, though, like, you know, you buy your base level Retina 4K iMac anyway, and it comes with a spinning disk drive. It's not even a Fusion drive. And the 5K comes with a Fusion drive as the base. And it's like, I get why they're doing that because of Apple's, one, you know, need to have its margins be comfortable, right? But, you know, from a ruthless, like, product quality standpoint, which is not fair, I know, because Apple needs to make a profit. I get it. But no Mac should ship without at least a Fusion drive. And in reality, I don't think a Mac should ship without just flash storage. I feel like spinning hard drives are the worst. They are the weak link in the chain. You got to get them out because they slow down everything. You and I both have replaced the drives in our Mac Minis with SSDs for the same reason, and it was a transformative experience, right? It's huge. They're expensive, and Apple's decided, you know, I'm not going to sell the Mac Mini for $799 base. It's going to be $599 base with an upsell for SSD. And the iMac, you know, it's the same reason that the MacBook Air is still being sold at $999, right? It's because they want to hit that price point. But it's a shame because computers without spinning disks are way better, and Retina displays are way better. The problem is that, like you said, the William Gibson thing, it's not evenly distributed. It all costs. And so I wanted us to not lose track that even though it's expensive, it's not like there aren't things that have dramatically made computers better. Like this iMac that I've got, it's amazing. And it's 2 years old now. It's amazing. It's a 27-inch high resolution display with a 512 gigabyte flash storage in it that's super fast, and it's half the speed of the one that's in the iMac today. It's amazing, right? It is amazing. It's just that it's been slow to get that technology into the whole Apple product line.
I agree. I mean, it feels sometimes like maybe the pace of development has slowed a lot on the Mac because it's a product that's been around for 30 years.
True.
It's there's going to be a little less, like, you know, dramatic shift, right? Because so many of the dramatic shifts happened in the first decade or two of its life. But that doesn't mean that stuff doesn't continue to improve, and it doesn't mean stuff won't continue to improve, as we've all seen that Apple seems to be pretty dedicated to the Mac, even though there are people concerned about the future of it. But I agree. It seems like there's a lot of stuff. But like, it's hard for me, as you point out, with the MacBook Air. I also have my 11-inch MacBook Air here, and it is hard to think like what would really improve this. Yes, a Retina display. Would a Touch Bar really improve it? It wouldn't make a huge difference in my daily life, but it would be cool. You know, would I add better connectors improve it? Sure, but like that future is not there yet either. So like right now, this is still a pretty great computer, and not having a Retina display to compare it to, it seems totally fine to me.
Yeah, it's hard to look at my MacBook Air screen now. It's like, oh, I mean, you get used to it, but it's like, it's not, great, but, you know, it's capable of doing everything I need to do, right? And that's the, you know, you compare it to something like a MacBook. And the MacBook to this day, the, you know, 2016 version of the MacBook is not particularly, you know, faster than my Air. And so, you know, you can put it, it's nice, but you can also put it off and still use the existing stuff. And it's still
pretty. Heck, my dad has a 13-inch Retina MacBook Pro that he does very little on. So yeah, that's always a little bit like I have looked at that a bit, but have not spent enough time with it to feel like super jealous.
Sure.
But a little jealous.
Just a little. So you've got a piece in there about traveling. We've talked about a lot of the stuff that you put in there. You wrote about the clock, so you know what time it is everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And my buddy trip mode that I use, I'm using right now for podcasting.
Yeah, same
perfect
here.
Perfect for you, right?
Oh, it really is good for me. I'm using it right now because my bandwidth is kind of limited. And so basically I can turn off everything, but like I think I have everything but Skype and Safari off right now. And Safari is just in case I need to like look at something while we're talking about it. But it's really convenient to be able to just shut everything else down. I kind of wish that feature existed on iOS because there is sort of, you know, you got the cellular settings and you can kind of turn stuff on and off. But like my first night or two here, I think it might have been my first night here. I didn't realize that you had to, you know, I knew you had, like I should turn off some stuff because I was using a different rate plan or whatever. And it turned out that somehow I left on the App Store updates and it downloaded like 800 megabytes of App Store updates over my cellular connection and like toasted my data cap, and so I started having to like scrounge and figure out how to get more data. And I was like, you know, it would have been nice if I, instead of being having to go through and specifically turn off all the things that I was worried might eat up data, if I could just like turn off everything and then reactivate certain things more easily. I don't know. Trip mode does it a lot smarter than I think the iOS does it.
Yeah, I agree. No, it's a great tool. And nobody seems to have heard of it. Every time I write about it, people are like, "What?" I'm like, yeah, it's good. And the Mac has no capability to do any of that. So being able to pick those things. In fact, I had a moment today where I was wishing that I had something like trip mode for my network. This is the whole thing. I'm going to write a piece about this. So I'm on Comcast, and they just instituted bandwidth caps again.
Yeah.
And it's a terabyte a month, which seems like a lot. And they say 95% or 98% of their customers don't need it. Well,
I can hit that.
My last 3 months, and it's only gone into effect this time, and you get three times where they warn you before they start charging you overages. So I'm in warning number one now, because my last 3 months data use has been 1.2 terabytes, 1.1 terabytes, and I'm probably going to do about 1.1 terabytes this time. So I'm just over. And I could just pay the overage. Or I could pay like $50 extra a month and have it be unlimited, which I don't really want to do. So I'm trying to figure out where the usage comes from. And that's the problem, is that I wish I had something like, because trip mode, when you got it on, it tells you exactly what is using data. And so I thought maybe what I am going to need to do is turn on trip mode, but that's only for my Mac. Like, is it my daughter watching Netflix? Is it my my server doing online backup? Is that what's doing it? I don't know what is causing us to use a terabyte. And if it's what we all use sort of legitimately, then so be it, right? But I'm not sure that it is. I'm not sure that this isn't something dumb that we could just
make cutbacks
turn
in a place,
right?
Well, you know what would be handy, Jason?
You
know what would be handy is if Apple made a router with a screen where you could like look at all of that, and like I feel like that's a pretty Apple-like feature. Here's a list of all the stuff that's chewing through your bandwidth.
Well, there's only so much.
If only Apple made routers.
There's only so much that the router can do, but I do have actually I have a Netgear router that sits between. I'm not using the Wi-Fi on it even, but I'm using it as it does quality of service. So it's my DNS router, basically. It's doing, it's, it's doing my local network and then passing it all through the cable modem.
It's a gateway.
It is a gateway. That's right.
What we used to call in the old network slang.
It's full gateway mode. It's there because it's got a quality of service setting, so I can prioritize my Mac so that if my daughter is trying to stream a Netflix video while I'm doing a podcast, guess what? I get the priority. Like, I get the bandwidth no matter what she does. Because it used to be I'd do podcasts and I would have to run and stick my head out the door and yell, everybody stop streaming, right, so I can get the bandwidth. And I don't do that anymore. So anyway, it's got a traffic feature, that traffic meter that I'd never turned on. I turned it on today because we're about to hit December and I'm going to try to spend December, my second month of warning from Comcast, figuring out where the traffic is coming from, or at least what the traffic pattern is. And so that's where I am now. My fear is that this is a constant stream of online backup. That's the thing that's swallowing this, is that I generate these giant podcast files and I do want to back them up, but my concern is that they are getting backed up and it's just destroying my bandwidth usage. But I don't really know. And of course, the traffic meter on the Netgear router is only going to tell me time and numbers. It's not going to tell me what devices. And that's kind of what I want. Is like, I want, like, give me the MAC addresses of the devices that are destroying the network.
You could probably, that's one of those things where it's like, you could probably, I bet you there is some tool that would let you like log all of it, and what you would need really then is a tool that lets you open and analyze that log and sort of like figure out what your big chunks are. I mean, and I found the other day, I was looking for, I've been very, very happy that so far my home server has not like had any major problems. But every once in a while, it seems to, like, I was having trouble accessing stuff on my home server and I was trying to figure out what the heck is going on. And so I was like, finally managed to like get in and look at like activity monitor. And I was like, well, there is this one process that seems to be like, I've never heard of. And I started Googling that and other people are like, oh yeah, there's some bug in like in El Capitan or whatever, where that thing just sort of shuts down a lot of your like bandwidth. And I was like, I wonder if that's true. So I like killed the process and I was like, whoa, everything is back. And I was like, that is definitely a bug of some sort. But there was, you know, again, I had to go through this multi-stage process of being able to get into the machine finally, then finding that there was a process that had run amok, then shutting down that process. It would be nice if there, and all that through like either command line tools or, you know, activity monitor. It's like, that's not a friendly way to find that out. But I feel like enough people are going to start running into problems like the one you're having, that it'd be great if there was a easier tool that could analyze some of that. And you know, maybe there is some complicated command line based stuff that lets you do that. But it's not within the reach of most normal people, even including some of the more tech savvy people like us.
Yeah, and this is the problem, right, is the existence of bandwidth caps means you have to worry about your bandwidth. And even as a tech-savvy person like me, like, I don't know. Like, I don't know if there's a way for me to get from 1.1 down to 0.9 and stay under the cap. I honestly don't know. I have no way to know. I just sort of do what I do, and I run my business here, and I'm uploading, you know, FTPing things and all of that, and you know, my kids are streaming videos, and all those things are fine. But are they? It suddenly every single thing I do is called into question, and I don't have a good way to answer it, and Comcast doesn't have a good way to tell me. And it just bugs me. And in the end, it's just probably going to cost me. I'm going to have to do the cost analysis of, is it better for me to spend the extra $50 a month or whatever? Because they've priced it in such a way where you pay an overage fee that's more than, you know, it's more than if you got unlimited, like it's capped at like $100 extra or $200 extra or something like that. So there's a period in there where if you go a little bit over, it's actually, if you always go a little bit over, it's better to just let them charge you the overage.
Right.
This is what I'm doing on my Linode server. It's the same story where the incomparable is sometimes over by a little bit. And I discovered that we would have to be over by a whole lot for me to go up to the next tier. So I just, you know, they charge me $8 of overage. And I'm like, fine, right? It's like the beats going and spending an extra $50 a month. But I just don't know. That's the frustrating thing. And it's just like the old days when there were caps for so whenever there's a cap. And on cell phones, it's the same way. Whenever there's a cap, yep, you suddenly get into cap management. And cap management stinks. I don't want to do that.
It's no fun. Yep. I mean, I've been doing that very carefully now in India for the last few weeks because I have added data a couple times. And fortunately, data here is fairly cheap, but it is I don't want to have to keep adding more data. So I've been going through and trying to turn off everything and make sure that I don't use my phone as much. And it's man, I am, maybe these are all first world problems, right? This is oh man, I really hate having to mention this. I really hate that I can't stream video when I'm at home, all this stuff. It's just, it's no fun. And I realize it's not in the grand scheme of things, it's not the biggest problem in the world, but it does, from a technology standpoint, it's just an annoying accounting thing, right? That's not cool.
Yeah. And it hovers over everything else you do.
Right. Right. Can I afford to do this? It's kind of budgeting, right? Which we all hate doing too, probably, which is oh, can I afford to do this? Do I need to set some time aside to not stream this, etc.? It's just, yeah, it's no fun. Might have to do it, but it's no fun. It's like eating your vegetables.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. And it's not, it's especially not fun to have that moment of what, I don't know, everybody stops streaming, right? Well, I could do that now. I could tell my daughter, stop watching Netflix, right? And she's not going to stop watching Netflix. I don't know. It's frustrating. But in the end, this may just be what Comcast can do what they want. I have no other options for high-speed bandwidth. So every time I write about this, and this is one of those things about the internet where everybody thinks they know more about your life than you do. Don't get me started on the internet. But this is one of those cases where whenever I complain about this stuff publicly, the first thing I hear is somebody saying, well, you should use something else. It's I can't use anything else. I have no other high speed internet options. I have DSL, which I used to use, and cable, and that's it. Yeah. I don't have fiber. I have nothing. There is no other option that I can have.
I am lucky enough to have, it's very bizarre because in Somerville, I'm lucky enough to have two cable companies, but you walk a mile into Cambridge and there's only one, and it's this is kind of ridiculous, and there's no Fios or Verizon or anything in I think Boston or Somerville or many of the surrounding communities, and so it's nice to have two cable companies, but even then you can play them off each other a little bit, but at the end of the day, they still have way more power than you do.
Sure.
So, that it never lasts either, too. You can get oh, we'll give you this great deal for a year. And it's well, if I want to switch cable companies every single year, I could probably get a pretty good deal out of the bargain. But it's a pain in the butt.
Yeah. I get that the bandwidth is an issue. But also, I feel if 98% of your users don't need the feature, then why does it matter?
Right, because you're just essentially getting all the bandwidth they don't use, right?
Yeah, and so their argument is, yeah, but you're ruining it for everyone else, and you should pay more and all that, and that's fine. But it's the other problem I have with it is I'm not using 5 terabytes, right? I'm using 1.1 terabytes, and unlike a cell phone plan where you can usually say, okay, I'll pay a little bit more for a little bit more. I literally can either have 1 terabyte or unlimited, and the unlimited is an extra $600 a year, which is, not the best.
It's not nothing.
So I don't know. Anyway, it's just my point is not to bellyache about Comcast so much as to say that I've discovered it's really hard to figure out what bandwidth I'm using. That's the part that gets me. So I don't know what we're going to do there other than, look at December.
It sounds like a good detective story.
Yeah. Solving some crimes. What the heck? Why not? Let's see what else. My other thing in the magazine was about anniversaries. I wrote this thing about, basically people were hey, tell some old, old stories. And so I talked about like the Apple doing anniversaries.
When I was back young and started out at Mac,
well, that's about it, right? I mean, yeah. This is what it's come to, Dan, is people are saying, hey, tell me about the old days, old fella.
Tell me about the good old days.
Yeah. So the good old days. But my bigger point was like, I got to witness Apple at its most like history phobic, which was the 20th anniversary of the Mac, where like we finally got the Steve Jobs interview, and it was literally, don't ask about the past or the future. Like, yeah. Okay, so how's your day, Steve?
Yeah.
Right? And he was on the phone for 5 minutes. There was like nothing to it, and it was super short and dumb. And you know, although back then in 2004, all of us were worried about the Mac because the iPod was so big, and it was like, is the Mac going to be okay? And he was super dismissive. He's like, of course. I can hear him saying,
yeah, until I come out with the iPhone. No, I liked the your little anecdote at the end there about his the question that got struck from the interview, because I don't think I had heard that story before.
Oh yeah, that's I mentioned that somewhere. I think I mentioned that right after he died. I mentioned that a little bit, but that was the famous like, is your plan to stay with Apple for the long term? Is basically what I asked, because he had just taken interim off his title, but he'd been there a while, and there was the question of like, I wanted to end on a forward thinking thing that was not about future products, right? Because I was so constrained in what I could do. And I thought that would be a good one of like, hey, Steve, what are you thinking about Apple like long term? I expected him to say something like, this is Apple is where I belong, and I'm going to be, I don't know how long I'll be here, but it might be a long time. I expected something like that. And instead he got like super philosophical and was like, yeah, you know, we only rent time here on planet Earth. You never know what's going to happen. You know, he didn't say you could die tomorrow, but that's basically what he said. And then Katie Cotton called me and said, you can't print that one. Which
I like that was because like kind of that's it was like a peek at the old hippie like 1980s Steve, right?
Oh sure,
like, but I love that part of
but
it.
But it turns like, out reason why it was hippie Steve Jobs is he had gotten his diagnosis and nobody publicly knew about it, and so they didn't want anybody even thinking that Steve was being philosophical about life because that might lead to questions about his health and things like that. So they basically somebody, and it might have been Katie, it might have been Steve, it might have been somebody else who was listening and was like, just get them to not run that question. And I could have said no, but I didn't say no. I'm like, fine, whatever. It was a hippie dippy kind of answer anyway. But yeah, totally. He had gone through his diagnosis where he originally thought that he was going to die very quickly. And then it turns out it was this rarer form that he could fight. And I believe hadn't even started treatment for it yet, because there was those stories about how he kind of dithered for a little while and tried like diets and things, which, you know, you got to wonder. Nobody will ever be able to tell, but you got to wonder if he had treated it more immediately, if that might have had a difference in the progression, but who knows?
Right.
But anyway, he was feeling real philosophical when I asked him that question. He gave me the really philosophical answer. And then somebody was like, oh, no.
Rein that sucker in.
Yeah. And then meanwhile, you know, 10 years later, the Apple's like, hey, 30th anniversary of the Mac, come on down. We'll furnish you with 3 executives and we'll talk about the past. I'm like, okay. And the future. Okay, great. And they like invited me to come talk to them, whereas we spent a year trying to get Steve Jobs for 4 minutes on the phone. So,
right.
You know, they changed in that time. Steve left and passed away, but you know, they changed a little bit too. Like you could see it in the difference there.
Right. Yeah. It's a different world.
Yeah. Yeah. Anything else you want to talk about before we wrap it up? We've been talking for more than half an hour. Look at us.
Yeah, well, we missed an episode last week, so I feel like we're making up a bit.
That's true. How do you migrate? I wrote a migration story. How do you migrate when you go to a new computer?
It's been a while since I've done it, but I think I tend so it's a question of I consider my desktop and laptop Macs to be sort of different classes. And so I think within each like sort of class of computer, I tend to try to maintain as much continuity as possible. So I generally do the super duper clone and unclone route. So like, for example, I mean, I've had a couple Mac mini servers, and I don't want to spend the time, you know, reinstalling everything. So I basically just, you know, make a super duper onto a, to an external hard drive, and then super duper back from that external hard drive onto the new computer, or, you know, even super duper directly onto the new computer, I guess, if I need to. I don't think I've ever used Migration Assistant since that. It just hasn't come up, or at least not in a long time. I might have tried it at one point. And I haven't had an opportunity to switch out this. The iMac I have is the only desktop I've owned for several years now. So I've never had to do any sort of migration or anything on that. But my laptops mostly, I think I've gone through probably either clones or set up
clone
brand new. Yeah.
Yeah. Or the, yeah. The, I mean, everybody's got a different take on it. Like I used to do the clone thing. There used to be when I was reviewing PowerBooks or and MacBooks, Macworld all the time, a lot of them. Boy, I mean, that was the only way I could do it is put the one in target mode and cop and clone it to the other one because you want to use it, but you need to keep working. So right. I just want to just put my computer on here, put the brains of my computer right on here. And I did that for the longest time. Lately, I've been using Migration Assistant a little bit more. There's complexity with cloning. Like if you have the wrong OS build, it won't boot. That's a complexity.
Right, right. Yep.
Many times I did the old clone it and then basically run it. Back when they had when they shipped with CD or DVD drives, they would have the boot, you know, they'd have the install drive. So basically you clone your old system and then install the OS over it, which was stupid, but it got you a usable copy that was basically the system that you had brought. But at some point I started switching to Migration Assistant. It worked okay. Although this last fall it didn't work when I tried it with the two new MacBook Pros that I was using. It sort of like gave me a mysterious error message and said, I've given up, essentially.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I definitely have the temptation looking at both my laptop and my desktop and realizing I was scrolling through the applications folder on my MacBook yesterday and I was like, well, there's a ton of apps in here that I'm never going to use again.
Oh, yeah.
That I installed to test things or whatever. And I'm like, oh, you know what? There's probably so much cruft on this system that's just like old preference files and everything and like half installed things, probably even like command line stuff I've mucked around with. Like at some point when I move to a new computer, I should probably start fresh and just sort of pull down the things as I need them. But like, you know, there's also that feeling like, oh, man, I'm not going to be productive until I get everything set up just the way I like it. So I don't know, but at some point I feel like I need a clean break.
I get that people do that. And then, I mean, what I wrote about is there's the two different ways of looking at that. And the one way is clean break. And then as I need things, I'll add them. And the other is clean break. And then I'll add my things back. And I sort of fall in that category because I hate the idea of like, God, you know, for the next 2 months, every time I think, oh, it's time to open Photoshop, I guess I need to install Creative Cloud and look at my license and get that installed and wait 4 hours and then I'll do it. Or I could just make myself a list and move on. Right. But I do see the appeal as I look here at my preferences folder on my system and find a Fireworks language preference from 2000, a date preference from 2000, Aladdin Systems Drop Zip from 2001.
Oh, dear.
Sherlock preferences from 2002. Palm Desktop Setup from 2002.
This is some serious archaeology here.
StarCraft preferences from 2002.
Wow.
Yeah.
Serious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, think about,
Eudora,
about all the crap that's on your computer.
Dreamweaver. All these preferences that are totally unnecessary that are from the early 2000s. These are like 14-year-old preference files that are still sitting there.
Yeah, this only goes back, I'm looking at mine, it only goes back to 2011, I think, which was my first MacBook Air. So I must have started clean with that one.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess what I'm saying
so
is
5 years.
I can see the appeal of starting fresh from time to time. I can see the appeal. Well, I don't know what else I've got. I
got some good feedback from my Backpage article this month, which was another exercise in wackiness.
Yeah, more wackiness, more zaniness. That's what it's for. That's what it's there for.
Yep. So that was fun to write. Always nice to make fun of Apple a little bit. Just a little bit.
A little bit, yeah. Exactly right. Well, you should.
I feel like they need it. They need to be, sometimes everybody needs to remember that they're human.
Yeah, it's fun. You know, you're not, I don't know, you're not, change the world with those things. It's all kind of meant to be in fun.
Maybe I am. Who knows?
Huh. Intriguing.
Just saying.
All right. Well, have a good evening. You're not going anywhere. Well, you're traveling over the weekends, but you're not going anywhere for a little while. You're there until you go on. You go to Germany and then you come home, right? But that's.
You will see next. So next week we'll talk, and then I am off to next weekend. I am off to the Maldives, which are little islands.
Oh yeah.
I'll be there for a few days. I'm looking forward to that. And then traveling in India in some more remote areas after we get back from there, and then to Germany. So like basically I have, when I leave Mumbai next week, yes, next week already, I basically will only be back for one day before I go home.
Wow.
So like basically I've got some about like 10 days of traveling starting next week.
It's
so I'm not
so
here
fast.
For that much longer.
Southeast,
I know,
Southeast.
I know.
So you've got one more clockwise where you're going to be there in Mumbai next week.
Yep.
And then after that, there's the, you know, I've got two traveling maybe availables down. So.
Yeah, probably not the first one, I'm realizing, but the second one I will be in Germany, and
right. It
should be plausible, although always depending on how good the hotel Wi-Fi is in Germany.
Well, as always, you know, I'm sure the Germans won't let us down. Cut to Germans. Anyway,
Germany.
All right. Well, thanks to everybody out there for listening to this, and we'll be back next week, almost certainly before Dan goes away somewhere else. And we appreciate you subscribing. It helps us do our jobs and write things about Apple and do this podcast and all the other stuff that we appreciate you for doing. So thank you for listening. Thank you for subscribing. And Dan, have a good weekend. Talk to you next week.
Thanks. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.